And I remember I was there doing Journey Live, and I had a tiny window of time. And I was like, I can go alone. And the ticket was insanely expensive. Like the most I've ever paid for a
Ever?
single ticket for a show before. Yeah, still to this day, it's the most
Do
I've
you
ever
remember
paid.
how much was it?
Oh, it's not classy to admit how much
I
I
am so
spent, but
curious.
it was a lot. And I went by myself in a random seat surrounded by strangers. And I remember I texted him and I told him, okay, today's the day I'm going. This better be something. And I had not listened to the music or anything. And I remember I texted him during intermission and I just wrote, fuck. And he wrote, I've been waiting a year to get this text or something like that. And it was truly one of the most powerful experiences I've ever had live. Hi.
I don't know if I remember how to do this. Hello, everybody.
I like the little false start.
We're live.
We're live, yes. This is being broadcast all over the
No,
world.
I'm saying we are alive. We are not dead. We're
And,
here.
yes. It's true. It's been a little bit of a hiatus. Mostly my fault,
Don't worry about it.
though not
It's
entirely.
so, I mean, come on. It's so worth it. You've done so much. Again, congrats on your Grammy nomination. Yay for Stray Gods.
Now, our Brushes and Keys collaboration on the clothing for the
Oh,
Grammys
yeah.
will begin.
Oh, yeah.
Last year, if anybody didn't see it, Anhela made a pretty kick-ass alien-inspired outfit that was basically, an awards suit, not really a tuxedo, but with some
Yeah.
garnish, a little wonderful xenomorph necktie clip thing, and also painted a wonderful kind of Xeno tail across my sport coat jacket. So this time we are deciding how much, like what the Stray Gods
Yeah,
version
we
of
will
that is,
see.
and there's
My
some
friend
pretty good
Nella said,
ideas.
just take your Persephone cosplay. And I'm like, dude, it's a red carpet. It's not a cosplay convention or anything. So I don't know how hard do I want to go on it.
Yeah, I don't recommend it because it's not that comfortable. It's meant for
Yes.
photographs, but the Grammys, the photographs last for
Right.
5 seconds, and then you're there for like
Yes,
5 hours.
exactly. Uh-huh.
So it seems worth being
Although
comfortable,
this
and I
is
like the
rare,
idea of a
I
little
think this what you're
flavor.
saying is rare because nobody in that event is comfortable. Like all those dresses are not at all made for stay there and hang out for six hours.
It's true, the photos last forever, but I don't know. I
Yeah,
prefer comfort.
I agree.
And you can make something that looks really nice that is comfortable. So it's not like you have
Yes.
to really pick between the two.
I was gonna say we've been so quiet because we're waiting for the new listeners to catch up. How
What
about
is
that?
that, your excuse?
Yes.
It's their fault. It's the children who are wrong.
We are, no, is that the chiller who run? We are very kind and generous to give them some time to catch up.
Yeah, definitely not busy.
Yeah, not at all, not at all.
Not at all. Well, fair enough. You are currently working on some exciting projects. I suspect the details of which we won't say here yet.
No, I don't think I'm allowed to talk about this yet.
Yeah, but there will be some things that we can invite people to in the new year on your side of things.
Yeah.
And obviously, a big part of my work has been the release and whatnot of Stray Gods. I suspect by the time this is published, a new project of mine will have been announced, which was not public yet, but I won't say what it is yet because it's possible that it won't be. So
Whoa.
I will keep it secret, and people will just have to tune in next time to learn
Oh.
what that's all about. But
Yeah.
that's coming.
Exciting. I don't even know what you're talking about, but that's exciting.
You do, you just don't know you do.
Yeah, so anyway, just a little checklist of things that have been going on besides all this work stuff is that we are moving and
Makes it
I guess
sound like a really
that's end
big
of the list. We're moving.
We're moving just to a slightly different part of LA. It's not even, when you say that, it makes it sound like we're going to London or something.
No, a move is a move. Even if you change rooms, you move your shed to another place. So that's moving.
It's true. But when you say it, so we're moving, it does imply like a big cross country trip or something like that. At least when I hear that, that's what I hear. So yeah. We are
it is as hard, you know, the fact that we have to pack everything, that's enough. That's enough work.
It's true. But yeah. So, but that point being, we will have future episodes recorded from new location. Yeah. At least your side of it.
Oh
if
my
not
God.
Both.
I just realized this is going to be the last one. I'm going to be here.
Unless we do one in the next couple weeks, which we absolutely can. No, it's just about getting in the rhythm.
It's true.
Just
it's
because
true.
Now you've said that, I'm going to make sure it happens.
You son of a bitch. We'll see. So, yeah. Well, anyway, I remember I have a little Instagram, what is it called? Like broadcast channel where I ask questions and update my followers on like personal things. And one of those a while ago was, what would you like to hear in the next episode? And that was basically life things that have been happening to us, like not really about
life updates.
Yeah, life updates. Yeah.
Well, I guess that's what we're doing.
Yeah. I remember we also were, the last time we were talking, we I don't know if it was the last one, but we talked about the power trip plan. We were very excited about that.
Yeah, I wanted to focus on that. We were planning to record while we were there, but it was a pretty exhausting trip.
So much.
And every time we were back at the room, it was also 5 trillion degrees.
Oh, yeah.
And so it's a little demotivating to do much with your life when it's just so hot. I mean, it was literally, what, 108 or something like that during the day? I mean, it was really scorching.
In the middle, not in the middle, but we were at the desert.
In Palm Desert.
Palm Desert, yes. What was the city?
Yeah.
Indio.
Indio is like the, you know, Indio is kind of like saying Burbank. It's this small little sliver, but it's Palm Springs, Palm Desert.
I see.
It's basically, for those unfamiliar with Power Trip, it was a metal festival that was held on the same grounds where they do Coachella every year. And it was pretty extraordinary. There were, I think, 100,000 some odd people there, give or take.
Yes.
There was a huge field of trailer park, kind of like people like RVs and campers and stuff. So people that drove from God knows where and were staying physically there. They had no hotel room or whatever. They were eating and drinking and sleeping and everything.
For 3 days.
for three. Yeah, and who knows when they first arrived. And,
yeah.
And so they were there for, you know, a long weekend in some form.
Mm-hmm.
And then also campers who got there somehow and then set up tents and stuff. So there were a lot of people that were just kind of permanently there on the festival grounds. We got a hotel in what I thought was going to be a very kind of like swanky, really nice, like where you're getting kind of like a little cabana, but it was more like an apartment in what felt more like a retirement community. and it was very nice, no complaints, but it was definitely not what I was fantasizing exactly, like a luxury hotel kind of environment.
Yes. This was my first festival, like music fest, and I don't know.
I think
it's
mine
gonna,
too.
I don't know if it's gonna be the last one. I'm pretty done with festivals for now.
It's a full-on thing, that is for sure. Although I will say, I don't know if this is normal because it's just not my normal scene, but I must say I did like the fact that we had the entire day to chill and get food and stuff. Until the first set was always at like 6, I think. And then the next, so we would get there, 4 or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
We did spend the first day in merch line for like 3+ hours.
Yes. Somebody fainted there.
Yeah. We saw our first fainter.
Yes.
That line was just so massive.
We thought it was going to be super nice and chill, and it, every day was so tiring. But yeah, it's two. It was two bands per day, per night, and the entire day for us to just chill and stuff. But yeah, just so tiring, and then heading out of that place also was a nightmare.
Yeah, that's true. At night, getting an Uber back to the hotel, because it was a good solid 20-minute drive in no traffic to the hotel, and so then you factor 100,000 people spilling out into the streets, and they closed the streets in all directions for like a half mile. So there, the first day we just walked forever and ever and ever till we got outside of the radius and picked up a car, and they semi-legally picked us up. Then we discovered there's an actual Uber lot, but I think everybody else made that same discovery from first day to second day, because it took like 40 minutes to connect with a freaking car, or it would connect us with one that was so far away that it was all the same regardless. So we spent a lot of time just standing in that gravel parking lot each day.
Know what is
at like
best.
Midnight.
Yeah, what should be the best way to do that? But yeah, I guess experiences.
We drove there, and so theoretically the thing that we were missing was, you know, parking ourselves. But I was like, this is, I don't know, I don't like to just sit in the car eternally. Mm-hmm. But I don't know. It ended up, that's not a big deal. We didn't say what the bands were. Kind of a insane lineup. Whenever I tell people, they're like, holy shit, all in one weekend?
All a bucket list of like metal. Like
for sure.
Lovers, old school.
Metal or hard rock, I would say.
Right,
because there's a few that are kind of like, are they metal?
Yeah, it was but, Guns N' Roses.
I don't think of them. I don't think of Guns N' Roses as a metal band, for example.
No, it's rock.
But go ahead. So Iron Maiden,
Iron
Guns N' Roses.
Iron Maiden, AC/DC, which was my favorite.
We'll get to that in a second.
So fun. Judas Priest, Metallica, and Tool. And AC/DC.
Let's work our way to that. Oh. So Tool was clearly the super outlier of the group. Like, they had a totally different vibe from all the other five, by far. And I it was worth noting, we ran into my pal,
It feels like the Breakfast Club, you know? Each one is so different.
No, but come on. It was definitely five of a kind and then one.
The Tool was the weirdo.
Tool was the absolute weirdo of the group, to the point that it was actually a bit of an odd... Now, wasn't Tool added because Ozzy dropped out?
Yes. No, that was Judas.
Oh, you're right. So Tool was always... Okay, so it was always a little bit weird.
Yeah.
We ran into our pal, Bear McCreary, who was there. We were talking about how...
Excuse me. I saw his ponytail, and I figured that was him from far. We were walking to our seats... And he was sitting
in a sea of like tens of thousands of people. And yeah, you spotted the back of his head. And we're like, I think that's Bear.
Yeah.
And sure enough, there with his brother Brendan. It's pretty awesome. So so we were able to hang a fair bit, which was always fun. And never get tired of that. Last year at the Grammys. And then theoretically this year, again, we're both nominated. In fact, Bear got two nominations because also... God of War Ragnarok was nominated for Best Surround Sound Album, so that made me very happy. I thought, you know, his work is just always so great. So it was fun to hang there with him. And point being, the reason I bring it up is because I remember after Tool's set, we went to go meet up with him, and walked past somebody who screamed, "I'm here for fucking metal, not for fucking art."
I love that so much. I loved it so much because it's so true. They're very artsy. It's a good way to see it. But yeah, obviously it's understanding that the kind of people that's there, they're not used to listen to art.
No, they want full, like, they want basically mosh pit, you know, like head banging, just nonstop high octane. And Tool is interesting because to me... In contrast to Guns N' Roses in particular, they are definitely a metal band, but they somehow make metal something that is simultaneously borderline meditative, and also highly contradictorily, really musically virtuosic. What Tool does is really complicated and really like sophisticated from a musical standpoint, but it kind of adds up to something that's weirdly chill, but also very much metal. So I think they're amazing, but in context, it did feel a little weird. It was a little bit like...
Also, I remember a lot of people upset because they couldn't see them perform properly. They were there, the band was there, but they just, they escaped from spotlights.
They have right, and the insert cameras, yes. I can't remember the term for those cameras, but the insert cameras that give you close-ups of people's faces for the people that are a half a mile from the stage, they didn't use those. They just had pure visualizers and graphics and stuff.
Which is sad, I understand, but also people that are upset, they definitely don't understand the point that they want to make. You know, the band is it's all about the music. They probably just don't care about, you know, their faces showing. Anyway, I would have loved to see them for a little bit. But we were not lucky enough to be as close. We were pretty close, but not as much as, you know, to see their faces clearly.
No, although when we walked to the front of our block... We were only maybe 20 rows back from the stage. They were pretty close. And people were pretty chill about wandering around. So that's an interesting thing. So then, yes, as you mentioned, AC/DC, I figured that Metallica was going to be the highlight for me.
Yeah.
They're certainly, I think, the most legendary of all six. They have the biggest... They cast the largest shadow of those six, metal-wise. But the difference here was that AC/DC... Yeah,
I'm not going to get into that, but I think I agree in a... You know, it's marketing... Marketing-wise, I think you're right.
Well, but marketing is a function... I'm not sure exactly what you mean by that. It's not that, like, some corporation has decided the most legendary of those.
I wouldn't say Metallica is the most legendary because we have real legends here, and it's hard to put them in a balance,
like a scale?
Yes.
Yeah, I'm simply operating on, if you were to ask 1,000 people and make a real nice cross-section of different ages and different demographics and different nationalities, and just said, put these six in the order of most legendary within the world of metal.
What is legendary for you? Because we could say the most known, that's true. But legendary,
it's a fuzzy definition, but it is by design. In the same way that if you were to ask people, what's the most legendary band of all time? Probably the Beatles would win, just overall. If you polled enough people, eventually they would emerge as the top. Now, everyone's going to have their personal favorite, but there's also a certain amount of respect that you might even go, they're not my favorite, but they have. Now, I think Zeppelin is probably the most of all in metal. But of those six, Metallica is the one that I think just has that, they have that like magic fairy dust quality. But I say all that as a precursor to, I don't think there's any question that AC/DC won Power Trip.
Yes.
They had far and away the most energized.
Although we saw the Metallica members enjoying the Judas Priest part.
Well, Judas Priest and Metallica, I mean, honestly, this was kind of true of all of them, I felt like, except Tool. They all have, like, when we saw the Rolling Stones and you get the feeling of, or like when we saw Elton John, you're like, these people have been doing this for half a century.
Yeah.
And they're still going hard. And Judas Priest had that quality where it was like, holy shit, they've been around for so long. And there's just a respect. There's just a kind of like, Like, I salute you.
Yes.
It's like the old admiral that still fits in their uniform, but they walk with a cane. It was pretty fucking impressive. But I will say the audience lost their mind. Now, part of the context is that Axel Foley, that's Beverly Hills Cop, Axl Rose, this was first time singing with them in like 7 years or something because of health problems and hearing.
Are you talking about Guns or AC/DC?
AC/DC. I'm saying part of the reason why their hype was so out of control was this was their first time playing together in 7 years.
But why do you say Axel?
I'm getting it turned around because I had such a lengthy conversation with Troy about this.
Okay,
and he made me realize that Axl Rose had stepped in to AC/DC temporarily.
Uh-huh.
And so, because I remember he was like, is Axl going to just go back and forth with both bands?
Right.
And I
right.
was like, I remember going and saying, I don't think so. And that was not the case. Just Guns N' Roses, because AC/DC, it was, I'm blanking on his name. It was his first time back with AC/DC.
Brian.
For Johnson. 7 years. Yes, Brian Johnson. Yeah. So my apologies. I got it turned around. Axl Rose was not singing with them because Brian Johnson was for the first time in seven something years back with them. So there was an extra set of hype around AC/DC that he was back. For the first time, and this was their first show in ages as a result, like properly the OG band. And I was blown away at how much more the audience was just exploding relative to all the others. Because again,
I kind of regret not buying those horns because they were my favorite.
Yeah, the flashing lit up devil's horns that like. Yeah, and it was funny. That was another thing Bear pointed out where he was like, look how many people threw those on in this audience. And it was like a third of the crowd. It was like every, you know, person, horns. Person, horns.
Probably
which made it seem like,
yeah,
maybe half. I don't know about half, but you're talking about tens of thousands of those, which means that's a huge amount of the crowd that are there showing their colors as like, this is my band. All the rest of these are bonus.
Right.
And it was crazy. It was, mm-hmm. I would not have guessed that. Again, I have always appreciated metal. I love metal for a lot of reasons. I love it. Like from album standpoint, from a production standpoint, it can be quite incredible just how much sound they're able to squeeze out of it. And then obviously from a musician standpoint, just the virtuosity, it's not an easy genre to be excellent at. Mm-hmm. They really have to be real musicians. And so I've always appreciated it, but I've only been to a few concerts of metal live in my life. It was never my main thing. So this was like a fucking steroids dose of it. That's a good question. I've been to like friends shows and, you know, passed through things randomly here and there. Of course, in this moment, you know.
Of course, yeah, I know.
If you ask me what pieces I've heard at Disney Hall or Carnegie Hall, I immediately also go blank because I go, I don't know. Have I ever been there before?
I guess.
But certainly no bands on this level.
Now that you mentioned Disney Hall, does the concert with the Whitesnake guitarist.
Yeah, with what's his name?
it was like a classical orchestra, and he was just playing the guitar with them. I don't think that is, but that's the only one I remember you've seen that you.
That was Steve Vai playing guitar with them, but that was also not. That was kind of like more ambient.
Right.
Guitar style music with orchestra, but yeah.
Well, I honestly, I'm so glad you were so down to do this. Besides the issues, like, you know, getting COVID after.
Oh yeah, that's right. You managed to get. It's crazy that 3 years you never got it, at least that we're aware of. And they always said, you know, dry outdoor environments are one of the least transmissible for COVID. And we were in the driest possible environment.
Yes.
In the outdoors, And you somehow managed to get it.
Oh, yeah.
Yep. Your case was not too bad, though. You had a few shitty days.
No, but yes, it was my first time getting COVID, and I remember, like, day number 2 and 3 felt a little funny, but I thought it was just the smoke of the people around me. They were just nonstop smoking, you know, weed or cigars.
Actually, it wasn't even that much weed. I felt like it was just a shit ton of cigarettes. Yes. It was oddly smoky of an environment.
Yeah, well, you know, it's like a biker, you know.
I guess. Yeah, I guess.
Well, it's not Coachella. It's more.
Yeah, exactly. It's not a bunch of 30-year-old stoners.
Yeah, exactly.
Like you said, yeah, they're all a bunch of fucking biker bar kind of like.
Yes.
I saw Judas Phoenix in 1981.
Yeah. No, I loved it, but yeah, the smoke. Of course, I needed some air. That I hate.
And also just breathing the fucking dust nonstop. Uh-huh. Like literal desert crap in your lungs. Every night I would take a shower and it was like I was like coughing up a bunch of crap.
Yeah, nose all dark, you know, all the black stuff coming out of it. That was not fun. But
that was part of the vibe. It's probably one of those things that people don't talk about with Coachella. I've never been to Coachella, but I imagine everybody comes back all full of desert shit also.
Oh, yeah.
From that.
Oh, I'm pretty sure that takes days to get rid of.
Yeah. Yep.
But no, yep. I'm fine. I didn't, you know, I was like in bed for 3 days and then just pain the rest of the week and it was gone. But yeah, one of the greatest experiences ever besides those little issues. And I don't know.
It was amazing.
I don't know if there's gonna be something like this, probably in the future. Nobody knows. But
the drone footage that they released on their Instagram and stuff afterward of the crowd and of just how engaged people were. And I will say, I love that while it probably did skew towards my age and even older because of the nature of the bands, it was pretty intergenerational. There were a lot of folks younger than us there too.
Yeah.
And in the way that, you know, again, once you reach a level of kind of legendariness amongst all those bands,
mm-hmm.
there's a certain amount of, I want to go. And I love that it had that atmosphere of, I want to be able to tell my kids someday I saw Judas Priest or I saw Metallica or I saw AC/DC. This is what I always am saying about going to see John Williams.
By the way, this morning I saw that AC/DC is coming back to stages. That they're going to start a tour. So I'm going to keep an eye on it because I want to see like a proper AC/DC concert. And I hope you can join me.
Yeah, I really enjoyed it. And to me, the desert heat was the main drawback because I'm always uncomfortably warm as a general state of being. But this was like, holy shit, 105, 108 for hours. And so that I think a normal concert, I'm fine. But all that said, we've been going to a lot of shows like just in the last year, give or take, because we also went and saw Coldplay. We saw a couple
that
years ago.
That
one
also has been one of my favorites visually and wholesome experiences.
You know, I was blown away.
Yes.
They really put on a great show, and it really felt – wholesome is such a perfect word.
Yes.
They really felt so plugged in and like with the crowd and in an – and in a not cheesy way. It really felt like, we're here for you. We do this because you're all here. And every band says that. But I thought similarly Metallica's vibe. It was kind of like, some of you have been with us for 30 years.
Yeah, they seem very grateful, for sure.
Yeah. It was really, I think so too. I felt like they did. So yeah, seeing Coldplay was really quite lovely, actually. I thought that was awesome.
Mm-hmm.
And we saw a bunch at the Bowl. Of course, John Williams, Jacob Collier was one of the greatest shows I've ever seen in my life. Truly, his level of brilliance. He also made a cameo with Coldplay, which was fun.
Of course.
He also made a cameo at another show we went to with Jay and Josh, the Quincy Jones' 90th birthday tribute that had like Stevie Wonder I think Herbie Hancock was there too, if memory serves, and
amazing.
And Jacob Collier played while his mom conducted the orchestra, which was cool, and a lot of fame. But it was great seeing our friend Josh, who apparently he didn't even know. We just said, "Hey, you want to come with us?" And they came sight unseen, knowing only it was a Quincy Jones show. But apparently, Stevie Wonder was like his bucket list of all time, and he had tears coming down his face seeing him live. That was so special.
Very.
And then we saw, again, if we broaden this to just the last couple of years, we saw, of course, Elton John, Rolling Stones.
Gorillaz.
We saw the Gorillaz. I'm forgetting, there's somebody else earlier this year that was a pretty big, what am I blanking? This is a much smaller show, but we saw Anthony Rapp do live concert at Catalina's, and we saw his one-man show in New York. Without you, but I'm blanking on.
I mean, if we're talking about shows, we were
big
at the
shows
Grammys earlier this year.
No, but there was a big. There was another like SoFi Stadium show that I'm.
What?
I know we went to. Oh! You know, with the big.
Muse.
Muse, yeah. Thank God. I was starting to picture the staging of it, but I was still blanking.
Yeah,
so we saw Muse.
My God. Yes, of course. How can I forget? It was so good.
That was also very good. That was also very incredible from a production standpoint. Just the sheer amount of like hydraulics and lasers. So all of which to say, this year has been a big year for really prioritizing seeing live shows. We've gone, I think we went to the bowl like 7 times or something. Saw Joe Hisaishi also at the bowl, which was incredible, doing a kind of Miyazaki retrospective.
Nice. Oh my God. I think I dropped a few tears.
Mm-hmm. We went and saw the Spider-Verse live.
Aha.
Where that they play the whole movie and do the score live, which was awesome. I thought it was great.
And performing with a pen was the highlight.
And whistling, doing the... which was fun, and of course there was the Game Awards show at the Hollywood Bowl, where Darren sang. Saw Verdi Requiem.
Oh yeah.
But also been to almost every LA Opera production, you know. So we saw.
Yes.
We saw like Turandot and.
Who's always open to bring people.
Yep.
To.
Mm-hmm. Just the other day. Frida y Diego, a relatively new opera. It's third run of it, but all in quick succession.
I love it just because I get to, like, being in front helps me check out their costumes. I always get to analyze that because I know people come for the music and the production in general, but I always analyze deeply the construction of the stage and dresses.
Absolutely.
Yeah. It's so fun.
Yeah, we always sit in the first row, and so it's been a lot of shows, and I think
it sounds like we're bragging, which it's not the point. I think the point is go out, have experiences, because yes, music sometimes can be a pain in the ass to be surrounded by people pushing your shoulder or whatever, but the experience itself is like nothing else. It's more comfortable to be at your home, putting on your headphones and chilling and listening to the volume you like, but it's another world to do it live. And if there's an opportunity and like where you live, you should probably go. I'm not gonna say it's life changing, but it kind of like
It can be.
Yes, I guess you're right.
There's no way that there are people who saw AC/DC at Power Trip. There's no way that there aren't some people in that audience that feel not the same after. Felt that seeing Pierre Boulez and the London Symphony do The Rite of Spring when I was 18 at Carnegie Hall. And then around that same time, on a far bigger level, I saw the premiere, the New York premiere. Technically, it was the second performance of John Corleone's Third Symphony called Circus Maximus that was conducted by Jerry Junkin and performed by the UT Austin, University of Texas at Austin, Wind Ensemble, Jerry Junkin conducting. I don't know that I've ever been more changed in real time ever than I was by that performance that day. This would have been like 2003 or four.
Pretty funny, yeah.
But I think the big takeaway is you're absolutely right. It can be more comfortable to put on nice headphones. You know, you can, in fact, you can get a sonically superior experience.
Oh, for like, sure.
Like those metal bands, I had to wear earplugs. It's too much. I'm too professionally dependent on my ears. And I see a lot of people do it. You know, it's pretty common, actually. We did it Coldplay as well. And like, it's pretty essential for me. I'm not willing to take that risk. And these bands crank it insanely high. Mm-hmm. So like, in other words, great quality, you know, throw on some Sennheisers, put on a vinyl or listen to a CD or something and listen to nice high, no compression, lossless audio, kind of go on Tidal. And listen, you can have a sonically superior experience, particularly with orchestral music, because you can record them in a way that is literally not acoustically reproducible. Of course, that's true of all bands. You know, all the crazy sounds, you listen to Beatles records and whatnot, all these sounds that you can't really recreate this stuff live. It's always compromised on some level. But that's not the point, obviously. I don't think anybody listening to this needs to be convinced of that, but it was such a reminder that this is where I love John Williams so much, where like when we went to see John Williams this year, it was kind of two groups. It was us, you and me and Bowie and Neil. And then like one box away was Troy and Pam and Laura Bailey and Travis Willingham. And Travis was like my favorite. I was feeding off of him the whole night because they had never been to see this show before. Troy had only been the year before when we went with Troy and Natalie Holt. And Travis, it was his childhood. You know, it was one after another where they would go. You don't know what he's going to play next because they don't, unless you pick up a program and are reading it. And most people don't. And I like better the surprise. So seeing his face where it was like, you know, you'd hear bum, 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 bum. And then Superman starts and he just loses his mind. Or Star Wars or E.T., you know, even like the Olympics. It was that real time. Oh, my God, this one, too. That's something that no amount of sonic perfection in headphones at home can replace for me. But then there's the communal aspect, you know, like we're talking to the people on either side of us who are brought together by this love of these bands, you know, or these concerts or these movies, you know, where there's people just crying, so moved, you know, like when we went to, which one was it? Was it the Miyazaki where we ran into our friend Kaveh from the musical Splaining podcast?
Yes.
Where he was sitting and some person randomly approaches and says, how many are there of you? And they're like, there's three of us. He goes, I have three empty seats right up front. And this guy had a box with empty seats and grabbed three random people from way back and brought them to the front for this incredible show. That was that night, wasn't it?
Yes, it was.
That's amazing. Mm-hmm. So it's like no amount of headphones makes a memory like that. And I think that stuff's valuable. It's not just who you see, it's what you ate, it's the smell, it's all of that.
Beer,
is really
cigarettes.
Honestly, yes. it adds something.
It's the whole mood.
Yeah, it adds something that makes it precious and fragile and ephemeral, and it's about this one moment in time where all these people came and experienced something that Jacob Collier, you know, just sitting there and just feeling, and like the wonderful eclectic nature of, you had a friend who had never even been to LA before.
Right.
And then on the other hand, we've got my friend Mike, who knows Jacob, all together experiencing this. It was so just magical. I think that there's no substitute for these moments of experiencing something live. Another aspect to think of it through is a topic that, come hell or high water, we will talk about on this podcast someday. You heard it here. Is the subject of AI and the arts.
Oh my God.
And for all the worry, all that AI can do is music production. But seeing a human being on stage, like, okay, maybe you could create a really cool visual feast in the vein of like the Gorillaz or something where you don't see the performers.
That's
but like you said, certain people, most bands, you want to see them. Mm-hmm. And so even if AI were to make more music and make it better, you want to, I think there's just a fundamental human connection that seeing them on stage, like when I saw John Williams when I was 16 and I was like, that guy right there across the room from me, he wrote all this music. That was his hand that did it. And I see his hand with my eyes as a kid. That blew my mind. And I just don't see a replacement to that, you know? And yes, of course, there's a certain amount of privilege, especially in LA. We're so spoiled with who just routinely passes through here at the Bowl the Forum and the Dorothy Chandler and at Disney Hall. Like, it's all the top performers on the planet. But you saw Paul McCartney in Costa Rica, and I've never seen Paul McCartney. So, like, it is a privilege, but it...
That was one of the most amazing things ever as well. That concert, just a little memory that I have. He was performing, and at some point he was just being thankful. And it was...
Like speaking to the audience, you mean?
It was winter, I think, and there's a lot of bugs always come out because of the rain and all that. And there's this little beetle that landed on his mic, and he talked to it, and he's like, okay, bye, friend, or something. And the beetle just leaves, and everybody just was, holy shit, it's just unforgettable.
That's so good. That reminds me of, there's a composer colleague of mine who I'm friendly with in London named Ilan Eshkeri. He did the Ghost of Tsushima video game, but he mostly does movies and television and stuff. And he works a lot with David Attenborough doing like nature documentaries. And he said they were recording at Abbey Road. David Attenborough, the legend, the myth, the gift to this world that is David Attenborough, was in the recording studio. And he said they're inside Abbey Road. And from location unknown, a butterfly flew and landed on the conductor's podium. But yeah, he was like, it was one of the most memorable and magical little moments of his whole life, of his whole career, to be making a nature documentary with David Attenborough and have a butterfly just appear indoors and land on the podium. I always thought of that when you told your Beatles story.
Yeah.
It's just so amazing. So yeah, I think if there's one takeaway from this, it's,
you know,
resist the laziness, and also, hold on, what you're about to say. You said, you know, hang on to that thought. I just need to add a little insert that my wonderful friend Michael Gunn, who was the showrunner on co-showrunner with Dana Ledoux Miller of the Thai Cave Rescue show on Netflix that I worked on. He's an old friend. 5-6 years ago, he said, next time you're in New York, you must go see Hamilton on Broadway. And he was one of the first people to pick up on it, because we're both students of history. We're both we're ardently fascinated by the history of politics, and particularly the kind of constitutional republic kind of as a form of government. It's a thing we're both nerds about. We like talking about, you know, the founding fathers, all that kind of stuff. And he was like, no one's ever really found a way to popularize this in quite the same way. Yes, there are, of course, operas like 1776, et cetera. But he said, go see Hamilton. He said this before I'd heard about it from anybody else. And I remember he said,
what, like 20 years ago?
When it first came out, when it very first opened, he somehow happened upon it. And I remember he said to me, no matter how inconvenient, no matter how much it costs, no matter what an imposition on your schedule, I promise you will not regret it. And this is a guy who never exaggerates. He's not prone to hyperbole. He won't ever go, that was the best thing I ever saw, the way I might. He's pretty measured in his words. He tries to be very precise. And he said, he talked a huge game. And I remember I was there doing Journey Live, and I had a tiny window of time. And I was like, I can go alone. And the ticket was insanely expensive, like the most I've ever paid for a single ticket for a show before. Yeah, still to this day, it's the most
I've
ever paid.
Do you remember how much was it?
Oh, it it's not classy to admit how much I spent, but it was a lot. And I went by myself in a random seat surrounded by strangers. And I remember I texted him and I told him, okay, today's the day I'm going. This better be something. And I had not listened to the music or anything. And I remember I texted him during intermission and I just wrote, fuck. And he wrote, I've been waiting a year to get this text or something like that. And it was truly one of the most powerful experiences I've ever had live. It was so, I was so blown away. Since seen it two more times, once more on stage. We watched on Disney Plus.
Yes? You saw the special they have in Disney, I think. They basically put it out. And do you remember any differences of that first time you saw it?
It's no, I mean, the show is... Oh, yeah. The only time they make big changes is during the kind of workshopping period, and that was already done by the time. It's not like when we saw Eliza, for example, and she was workshopping material.
Disney, it was the same?
100%.
Oh, wow. Well,
Broadway shows are too complicated to make big changes once you're up to a certain level. Plus, by the time we watched it, you know, it was already so popular that they wouldn't dare change anything anyway. But
of course.
It was point being, as a side note, just another one of those where, don't forget what you were going to say still, but I was going to just sum it all up. And I'm sorry, I'm talking so much. I just wanted to say I don't mean to monopolize, but I just want to say that I have never really regretted, I think, any live show, because even when it's not been my cup of tea, making memories out of the world, especially when you go with people, you know, it's a shared thing, whether it's just us or whether we go with friends. I really love mixing and matching groups that don't know each other. You know, like bringing people that don't know each other to the bowl or whatever. I love that. Or like we've gone, you know, we went to the LA Opera once with Andrea's daughter and Maggie, you know, the Lady Dimitrescu from Resident Evil. Like these are people that don't know each other.
She's coming again to this. No, she's not coming actually. Yeah, never mind. We had a stand-up comedy thing and she can't make it.
She can make it, but either way, it doesn't matter. Yeah, so we'll see. She messaged earlier. She's very jet-lagged.
You son of a bitch. Anyway, what I was going to say is that talking about like the experiences and how this weekend there was a festival, like a music festival, rock, and a lot of different types of rock and bands. I don't even know how many bands were there, like 30 or something, in Mexico. Mm. And my friend Sebas was there. And he suddenly met with Adri, and they sent me a picture. Yeah, it was.
Yeah, I didn't know about that.
Thing. Yeah, no, nor me. I didn't know that. I didn't know she was gonna be there. I knew he was gonna be there, but
they didn't know each other.
No, I mean yes and no. They are familiar, but yeah, it was very funny, and hopefully they're friends.
No. Yeah, I do love that aspect of it as well. The people that you meet and the way the world gets smaller. Again, I fully acknowledge that there is a level of luck and privilege to all of this. And I don't want to be cavalier that sometimes these things are not accessible to everybody, or they are special occasions like once every few years. But I would just say that even if it is that, even if it's once ever in your life, I know I'm biased as a musician, but I just can't overemphasize enough how precious and valuable and how much I think it's part of the human experience. You know, what do you want to do with your life? Part of the reason why we work hard and put food on the table and save up money and that sort of thing is to have these precious experiences.
Sure.
And yeah, okay, for some that might be different. For some, maybe it's going to theater, or maybe it's vacations of sightseeing or whatever.
Yeah.
I can extrapolate this to whatever. It doesn't matter to me, but just... The value of having these things that could only happen then and there, you know, that to me, there's something to that is magical and not replaceable.
There's always something to learn, even if it's the worst thing ever that I actually had seen before. Disney Hall, I'm not gonna name names, but the worst thing ever.
You're not insulting anybody naming names. There was a contemporary composer who was having an LA, I believe the LA Phil had commissioned this piece.
I learned with that horrible experience that I actually am not into contemporary music.
And that's not even true, because there are plenty of contemporary works which I think you would. I played for you Michael Doherty's Fire and Blood violin concerto, inspired by Diego Rivera and Frida Kahlo, after we saw the opera about them.
Again, it's not my cup of tea. I know that. When it's about contemporary, I probably, the most possible thing is that I'm not going to like it, but I'm open to it. But anyway, everything is just a way to learn. And
well, but look, Journey is contemporary music. You know, John Williams' music from Memoirs to Memoirs of a Geisha is contemporary music. I'm not of the type that says that classical contemporary need be the sole representative. And even then, again, I bet you would like.
That's true.
There's a specific type of contemporary composer who drives me nuts. And yes, I don't. That piece to me did not do anything for me. That was Do Re Mi by Pieter Itivash. That didn't do anything for me either.
I think
but
I was
all
more
power
upset
to him.
Yeah, I was more upset of the fact that I was hungry.
You were very hungry, and I remember you were also very new to that whole thing. It was like that was a pretty brutal one to throw you into, and that was not. For the record, in my defense, that was not the reason why I bought tickets for that concert. I bought tickets because they were at the second half of the show doing the Berlioz Symphonie Fantastique, which is a fantastic piece.
I forgot.
That's a fantastic piece.
The trauma that I even forgot the main thing.
I remember you fell asleep. I remember you were so checked out by the time that piece started.
I can fall asleep in the middle of
you
a
did?
Concert.
You did?
I was just so done.
You were very tuned out, and so the whole thing backfired because that was the piece where I remember I said, there is a work that is a timeless classic that everybody loves, and it's I could talk about it for hours. It is the birth of modern orchestration. It's by one of the great composers of all time, but this piece in particular.
Yeah, it's all learning. Like it's I didn't take care of, you know, the main thing is just that I could have eaten something quick. And be fine.
You were quintessentially hangry.
Yeah, well, no. It was a mixture of things, but not the best one. But you know, I learned. And I guess this is a great update of some of the things we've done this year, and it's good to remind others that go out and go listen to great music, and even if it's not great music, it's gonna be a probably unforgettable experience.
Or even small, we left off another that we saw recently with like 40 other people, which or maybe 60, I don't know, was that band Emil, in which Joris plays. Like we went to a thing called the Moroccan Club, very small little room, standing room kind of club where, you know, small bands, you know, like places like here in LA, there's like the Viper Room or Hotel Cafe, or the Troubadour when we saw Sean James with Troy performing. Yeah.
These small
little venues, that's also really great. It doesn't have to be Disney Hall or the Hollywood Bowl or the biggest venues in the world. Go see some local band you never heard of.
Yeah. Those were very interesting. I really love those sounds that
that Joris was playing.
Yeah.
Oh, it was amazing. I loved it actually. Fun. The musicianship of that band was excellent. Mm-hmm. Really loved it. And so yeah. Anyway, life is short, and you do put yourself out of your comfort zone. Go see. This is where I owe you a big credit because I don't think I would have ever gone to see most of these bands without your encouragement. And I have loved every one of these shows. Every one of them.
Yeah, me too. I'm glad you're down for crazy stuff.
And I've always respected all these groups, but it's just like, you know, you go, what could I do tonight? Here's 20 things that I might think of first. But you're like, no, I want to go see X or Y. And I'm like, you know what? Okay. You do a lot of stuff. You know, you come to the Disney Hall and the Hollywood Bowl probably more frequently because of me than you would on your own. So it's all fair. But every time I'm glad. Every single time I'm grateful that we did it.
For sure. Well, everybody, thanks for listening. Happy Thanksgiving. Hopefully I get to edit this.
Yeah, we're recording this during Thanksgiving week, but I doubt it'll be out by then. We'll see.
Yeah, I have a bunch of boxes, and actually my room probably is too echoey for this, but yeah, there's nothing in my room anymore, and I'm still working on putting things away for the main day, and yeah, it's been a little crazy. Canvas is so confused. I'm dealing with that as well.
I bet, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, but no, fun
times. She's her whole world has been sort of.
Yeah.
She's only known one thing.
Yeah, I'm just excited. It's gonna be your first Christmas in a house.
And a proper yep. Yeah. We'll have to for fun. We'll have to record a episode out in the yard at some point. Just to be silly.
Of course.
All right, everyone, go enjoy your life. Happy Thanksgiving. And catch you later.
Yay!